in a world where fiat trembles and the mempool never sleeps, one signal cuts through the noise. Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, Layer 2, your premium passage to the hidden rifts of Bitcoin culture. Buckle up and feel the voltage.
Jameson, welcome to Plebchain Radio.
Glad to finally have an opportunity to speak with one of my favorite shitcoiners.
Well played, Jameson. So we'll start with the op return dust up, which seems like the dust is settling just a little bit, but it was late April, early May. It was all the talk of the Nostiverse and indeed the Twitterverse. So for our non-technical listeners, and actually for anyone, what is your perspective on what exactly went down with the op return controversy?
Oh boy, it's really complicated because the op return debate goes back a decade. So there's a lot of minutia and technical nuance as to like how we got to where we are today. But I think if we skip over the like decade of debate over like how to try to disincentivize people from putting stupid data into the Bitcoin blockchain, we can fast forward to where we are today, where essentially, you know, we have, I would say, Luc Dashier being kind of a head or center of this whole concept of trying to fight against spam or fight against uses of Bitcoin that are considered, you know, non-financial, non-monetary, and therefore not appropriate for Bitcoin as a protocol, as a network, as a data structure, you know, the blockchain itself. And I think that really it all came to a head where this one pull request was essentially resurrected after a 2-year hibernation, because it's pretty much the exact same pull request that was made by Peter a couple of years ago. And it came back for a few different reasons, but mainly because the Bitcoin Core developer Antoine Poncet, hopefully I pronounced that correctly, was at MIT Bitcoin Expo with me, actually, a couple of months ago, and he was speaking to some developers from Citrea, and they were telling him about essentially the hacky stuff that they had to do to work around some of the limitations of the Bitcoin protocol's policy, or at least Bitcoin Core's policy, with regard to relaying transactions and how you're allowed to use op return to store little chunks of data. And essentially this has to do with Citrea's Groth 16 proof, which is used by their zero knowledge rollup system. It's the second layer system that they are developing. And there's this one particular fraud challenge edge case where if you think a validator is trying to defraud people and lying to them about the actual state of the rollup, the second layer, then you can challenge that and essentially steal the money from them. You know, this is a disincentive. And so this is an extreme edge case, but Antoine basically realized, oh, this is a pretty hacky solution that they came up with, because they essentially are creating these other outputs that are tiny little dust outputs and are going to arguably pollute the UTXO set for all eternity. And they're doing this because they can't simply put all of the data into the op return itself. So they had to split up the data, put it in a few different places. And so this made him concerned. And he basically went and said, hey, Peter, I think that we should talk about raising the limit on the relay policy again, so that it incentivizes people not to do this hacky workaround. And so Peter said, sure, whatever. He recreated the PR, and that then got onto the radar of people who are, you know, vehemently against any sort of non-financial data in Bitcoin. And I suspect, you know, they got pretty frustrated, but as a result of several different things that happened, right? So the thing that I think really kicked it all off and put it into hyperdrive and spilled over into social media is when one of the people commenting on the pull request then started commenting that, oh, you know, Jameson has commented on this pull request and he should disclose that he has a conflict of interest because he's an investor in Citrea and so on. And that was actually, by commenting on that, that was actually a violation of one of the rules of participating in rational discourse on the Bitcoin Core repository, which is that to stay on topic, you have to talk about the actual proposal, the idea, and not about the people who are discussing the proposal of the idea. And so I think that got the person's comment removed. They may have been banned for a day or two. Then Bitcoin Mechanic came in right after that and was like, hey, this person got banned. It was wrong. And I think he got banned as a result of doing that. And these bans, of course, are only for a day or two. It's not a permanent thing. But, you know, that's when things, I think, really got spilled over into social media. And it turned into a whole, oh, Bitcoin Core is censoring people, so on and so forth, when it was, in fact, enforcement of the moderation policy. It then, of course, got worse when a lot of people from social media come in on the pull request, generally, I think, under the mistaken assumption that pull requests operate via democracy and voting. People who don't understand how the actual system of ACKs and NACKs work, and that, you know, just simply saying ACK or NACK doesn't really do anything. You're not adding signal, you're just adding noise. You have to, you know, present, you know, novel new arguments or perspectives and, you know, add to the conversation constructively. So, you know, that got out of control, and it got eventually to the point where the whole PR conversation got shut down. And, you know, I think that ended up pissing some more people off even more than that. And, yeah, then it continued for several weeks, and we can go more into details and stuff there. But I think one interesting thing that I would want to note is that the original claim that I have a conflict of interest as a result of my investment in Citrea is actually incorrect. Now, it's true that I have a financial interest in Citrea, an extremely tiny one, you know, compared to my Bitcoin holdings. So, you know, it would be illogical for me to do anything that is bad for Bitcoin just because it's good for Citrea, you know, from my own financial perspective. But even beyond that, the reason why it's not a conflict of interest is because this proposal does not actually benefit Citrea. Citrea doesn't need the change. Citrea never asked for the change. And even if the change is made, it will have no impact upon Citrea's operation. Because, as I said, this is only used in one really specific edge case where a validator is lying and trying to defraud people. So the way that the game theory and the incentives are set up for Citrea and their validators is that this is probably never actually going to happen. If it did happen, very bad things would result, right? So this is kind of analogous to if you have a Lightning channel open and you try to close that with an old stale state and defraud someone by settling the channel in a way that the balances are not actually up to date to try to get your money back. And so, you know, there are penalties and ways that essentially that can be challenged by the person that you're trying to defraud. And that's why we don't see that actually happening very much. It's incredibly rare for that to happen. And there's, you know, tens of thousands of Lightning channels open. Whereas with Citrea, there's going to be one zero knowledge roll up. And I think maybe a dozen validators who are all like well-known and vetted enterprise entities, so on and so forth. But that's my high-level rant, and we can get into any more details if you want.
Yeah, I certainly want to avoid the Twitter drama that happened. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's particularly constructive, although it's directionally indicative of perhaps the issue at hand, right? Let's not get into personalities or the drama itself. But you did say, it sounds like, Jameson, what you said was a conversation between a Bitcoin Core developer and someone at Citrea triggered the pull request because it was determined based on that conversation between those two individuals that it would just be easier if Citrea did its roll-ups or the way it showed its proofs or whatever it is, right, with a larger op return size.
So that's where the real question, and this is why I think a lot of people got confused, is that this proposal was never about making anything easier or cheaper or faster or better in any way for Citrea. It's about what's better for Bitcoin as a network and how do we incentivize or disincentivize people to do certain things with the Bitcoin protocol.
So let's just get into it there then. Do you think the op return limit of 80 bytes, which Bitcoin Core has had for almost 10 years at this point, right, since the op return was, is that correct or should it be removed?
I don't think there's any reason why 80 bytes is more or less optimal than anything else. I think this would be a different conversation if it was happening pre-SegWit, right? Because essentially the witness discount that was enabled in 2017 is effectively what is being used by people who are inscribing data onto the Bitcoin blockchain because it's far cheaper for them to do it in that fashion. And so that's why the landscape of, you know, how are people going to put arbitrary data into the blockchain today is different than it was 10 years ago when this op return debate started. And so from an incentivization perspective, I think it doesn't make much sense to expect people to start putting like a megabyte of data into an op return because it's going to be at least like four times more expensive than having them put it into a witness. And there are some charts that are out there where people have actually, you know, gamed out exactly what the cost is. And I think it's basically if you're trying to put more than like 140 bytes, so it's like 130 to 140 bytes, that's where the kind of incentive crossover threshold is. Of if it's more than 140 bytes, you're probably actually going to save money by putting the data into a witness as opposed to putting it into op return.
So why increase the limit now on op return?
Yeah, so there's a few arguments. One of them is to not have this disincentive that results in people doing what Citrea has done, which is architecting a protocol that ends up creating these tiny little dust outputs if that situation happens. Like I said, this situation is never expected to happen, and even if it did, it might be like once a year. You know, this is an incredibly negligible edge case, but this issue is not about Citrea. It's about the fact that this is a permissionless protocol, and anybody could come along and run into a similar sort of a set of incentives where we would prefer that they not do that, and they might build something that ends up creating tiny little dust outputs at a far more high volume than this one edge case with Cetrea. So that's, I think, the way that the more dispassionate, you know, technically minded protocol developers are looking at it. And then there's also a few other edge performance issues just with regard to like network centralization and performance of block propagation, where when you have a large gap between the consensus rules and the transaction relay policies on the network, then what you're doing is you are incentivizing people who want to build in that design space that's outside of transaction standard policies, but still inside of Bitcoin consensus. You're incentivizing them to go and essentially send their transactions to a handful of centralized miner APIs. So that's just not great in general from a like miner health of the network, that, you know, we're incentivizing people to only go to a few miners. We preferably want for all miners to be competing across all valid transactions that are being proposed in order to have a healthier market. I mean, mining is already way too centralized, in my opinion. We don't need to make it even more centralized. And then there's this issue of compact block reconstruction, which is basically that a number of years ago, I believe it was Peter Wille, developed a system. I think this is where he was using the mini sketch, but essentially he created a way so that you could very quickly reconstruct a block without having to get all of the transactions from your peers. Like, this is the way that blocks quote unquote propagate over the network so quickly these days. I think that on average they propagate through 50% of nodes on the network in under 1 second. And the only way that that's possible is because the vast overwhelming majority of transactions have already been propagated across the entire network first and are sitting in the mempools of nodes. And so when a block comes along, we don't have to rebroadcast all of those transactions because most nodes already have them. Instead, we can just send the block header and, you know, the Merkle tree that says like these are all the transactions inside of them. And so as a result, the majority of nodes will already have all the transactions they need, you know, other than the Coinbase transaction for the block itself, and can then validate that all and then, you know, relay the block header once it's validated to all of its peers. And, you know, that's how the gossip protocol works on the network, is, you know, each peer has to validate any transaction or block it receives before it then offers it to the rest of the peers. So, you know, every millisecond that it takes longer for a node to fully reconstruct and validate a block then has this sort of ripple effect across the entire network of slowing down the propagation of blocks. And you don't want blocks to propagate slowly because that can also affect things like miner centralization, once again, giving some miners an unfair advantage.
So let's go back to the PR, the contentious PR. And before I ask this question, we need to establish some ground knowledge here. So again, in simple terms, can you explain the data carrier size flag?
Well, I mean, this flag is basically a policy, right? So if you are using the op return functionality within Bitcoin scripting language, you can then put some arbitrary data after that opcode. And as it stands right now, I believe originally the policy for data carrier size was 40 bytes, and then it got raised to 80 bytes. I mean, this is all part of that like decade of lore and history of going back and forth on this issue. And so essentially that means if you put more than 80 bytes after your op return opcode, and then you broadcast that to nodes on the network, a node that is running the default Bitcoin Core configuration will reject it. It'll say, you know, this is valid, but it's non-standard, so I'm not going to turn around and offer it to all of my peers. And so that is how your attempt to broadcast a consensus valid transaction falls flat on its face. And, you know, that means if you don't know what you're doing, you just give up at that point, right? But if you know what you're doing and you're incentivized to try to get this transaction into a block, then you start looking for other ways around the standard policy rules. One of those, as I already said, is just going directly to miners. There's a number of large pools that have private APIs where you can just send these transactions to. Another option is to use Libra relay nodes. And so there are essentially a number of nodes out there that will relay pretty much anything that is consensus valid. And so by connecting to them, you know that it's not going to get dropped on the floor. They are going to relay it to all of their peer nodes.
But isn't there a binary flag that you could set to 0 or 1 that allows, as a node runner, right, that allows mm-hmm. you? So what my understanding of this PR is, it removes that option as well. Not only does it increase the limit from 80 bytes on the op return length, but it also removes that ability for the nodes to set the flag to 0 or 1.
Share their secrets you hold dear. Now the signal fades. You have reached the end of the free tasting menu. 21 delicious minutes gone in a flash like a Vespa on the Via Veneto. But the real feast? It's still simmering, thick with secrets from our wonderful guest that could set the whole piazza gossiping. Why stop now, Bello? Slip past the velvet rope, become a Plebchain Radio Layer 2 patron, and I'll pour you the rest of the episode, hot, uncut, al dente. One tiny click, a few shiny sats, and the door swings open. Go to the Fountain app, find Plebchain Radio, and click on subscribe. You will not regret it, I promise you. No subscription. C'è peccato. You'll be wandering the Roman night, wondering what you missed, like a tourist with no lira for gelato. So, choose passion over penuria. Hit subscribe, and I'll be waiting. Molto contenta with the espresso and every last whispered word.
For just a little every month. You keep that passion burning bright, lifting up with funds on try. Turn that silence into light. Send your life out in the static waves. Let their voices never die. With your subscription, give your means, and help echoes rise.